This is Rabbi Josh Yoder of the Stanton Street Shul. Thank you for downloading this class podcast. These classes are provided free of charge through the generosity of the Stanton Street Shul community and supporters like you. If you do enjoy them, please consider making a donation to our synagogue's building fund on our website's shop donate page at www.stantonstshul.com. Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night, October 30th, 2013, and we have an extra special class in the Current Jewish Question series. We're about to start a unit on electricity, and one of the things that we've repeated in this class is before you actually go through the halachot of something, you have to know what that something is. So given that we're going to be speaking about electricity tonight, we're going to learn about what electricity is from one of our members, a world-renowned physicist, Dr. Alan Mincer. And let me say that I am personally just thrilled that we can do this. I've wanted to do this for about 4 years now, and I'm thrilled that we're able to actually pull this off. For those who are unfamiliar with Dr. Mincer, he's a professor of physics at New York University, a PhD from University of Maryland. His area of research and interest is experimental high-energy particle physics and astrophysics. He has won New York University's Golden Dozen Teaching Award in 1995 and 2000, and most recently was on the team that helped discover the Higgs boson. So if that's not, you know, when I say world-renowned, I don't just throw out this stuff as hyperbole. So we have invited Dr. Mincer here to speak to us about electricity so that when we actually start discussing the halacha, we'll have some idea of what we're talking about. And with that, I turn the floor over to Dr. Mincer.
Okay, so thank you for having me here. I'll start off sitting, and then I find it hard to talk without waving a hand with something in it, so very soon I'll probably pop up. And I find it hard to resist not to tell you the story of Richard Feynman, which Rabbi Yoder knows, but I can't resist.
We'll actually have that exact story, like the text of it, in one of the future sources.
So should I not bother? Or?
Do it now. It's good for a petition.
So Rabbi Yoder, Richard Feynman, I think, was at JTS. Mm-hmm. He was at JTS, and he was sort of upset because people there were very interested. They had a physicist there, and they wanted to know about electricity. He was trying to understand why, and they said because they want to know if electricity is fire. And basically, for halachic reasons, and basically he was very disappointed that here we're learning all these things about the universe, and all they care about is to know about electricity, if electricity is fire. But he said that later that day, he had the opportunity to eat at the household of the mother, I think, of one of those people. If you remember the story, you can correct me. And she said that it was a wonderful day for her, because she met both a professor and a general that day. And he said, so he was very unhappy with the culture, but he said, look, a culture in which a professor waits the same as a general, it's not a bad culture. So, anyway. I was asked to talk about electricity, I guess, and what is electricity. And eventually the question is, electricity is fire. Is electricity fire or not? And the problem is that fire is not a well-defined scientific term. Fortunately, I don't have to talk about that. Electricity actually is also not a well-defined scientific term. I looked it up in the dictionary to see what it has to say about electricity, and it gives three possibilities. It's the flow of electrical current, it's the energy associated with electrical things, or it's the study of those things. So the nearest that we use it in physics is as the study of things that have to do with electric charge. That's my best understanding of what electricity is, if you ask a scientist what is electricity. I think for the purposes here, what's of interest is how does the electric property of matter, how does that give you energy and allow you to do useful things with it? I think that's sort of what's germane here. So what I'll wind up talking about is first about electric charge, what it is in nature, what the flow of electric charges or current, and I'll talk about how you get useful things from that, how you can take that and convert the energy it has to various uses, whether it's in light or motors or whatever. We tend to be very technical in language, so if I say anything that doesn't make sense or whatever, please stop me and ask, right? There's no point in my talking to hear myself, even though I love to hear myself talking, but that's not presumably the purpose of this. Okay, so stop me if, and I also tend to sometimes speak very quickly, so slow me down, ask me whatever, feel comfortable. So first let's talk about what electricity is and so on. This is something that people knew about thousands of years ago. They realized there's some materials that if you rub them, you can pick up little light things. There's some sort of attraction. So people knew about forces. They knew you can push on things and they go someplace. But they realized that there's some other property of matter which allows it to exert a force. Again, you can pick things up or whatnot. Benjamin Franklin played a lot with this stuff. Right, so his, you may know that he worked with lightning rods a lot. He worked with lightning rods not to protect houses, but he wanted to access the electricity in lightning. So he'd have lightning rods and attach it to conductors, and then when lightning would strike, he'd have a source of electricity and play games with it and so on. So I won't go through the history, but it's a long story until we got to our understanding of what it is today. Okay, so jumping ahead to today, we understand there's a property of matter called electric charge. Okay, that has nothing to do with mass, or weight, or time, or whatever. It's a new property. It comes in two kinds, which we've called plus and minus for historical reasons. And positive charges repel each other. So if you have two things that have electric charge, if they're both positive or they're both negative, they repel each other. If one is positive and one is negative, they attract each other. Okay, electrically charged things are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Because the atoms that everything are made up of consist of a nucleus which is positively charged and negative electrons going around it. The positive charge, because it's the opposite of the electrons, attracts it. And indeed, all of chemistry is basically the attraction of charges. What happens is that there's a nucleus holding on to its electrons, there's another nucleus holding on to its electrons, but the second nucleus is stronger than the first nucleus, so it wants to grab away the electrons from the other nucleus, and the other nucleus tugs back, so two people tugging the same thing are attached to each other. And depending on who tugs stronger, you can get chemical reactions where one other nucleus is stronger, so it pulls them away and winds up attaching to something else. But all of that is, right, that's all the electric force. It's also possible to get electric charges moving, and for the most part, that's electrons. And it's possible to have both positive and negative charges moving. You can get the motion of electric charge in various ways. I'll probably wind up using the term current, which is just electric charge flowing past some plane, right? So if you have a wire and there's electricity flowing through the wire, you take a slice through the wire and you say how many units of electricity passed this plane that you've drawn per unit time, and that's what we call current, the amount of charge flowing per unit time. Okay? So let me stop with the talk about electric things for a second, but that's sort of the basic definition. There's electric charges, there's a flow of electric charges, which is current. So maybe before I go on to the next thing, which is energy, and then put it together, I'll ask you if there's anything you want to ask me about that. Yes.
Based on how you described it then, you know, if you would pour, say, certain two chemical solutions
Excuse me,
together...
Can one get to the theater?
Upstairs.
Upstairs?
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yes, for those, there's a Russian play going on upstairs called Vanya, so that happens every now and again. If you take two solutions and you pour it together and it has a chemical reaction, would you say that that's electric in a way?
So the question is, what do we mean by the term electric? When you have a chemical reaction, what it means is that there are electrical forces, mm-hmm. and there are particles moving around.
Okay.
Right. So.
So anything of particle moving around has some electrical force.
If they're electrically charged particles, there are particles which don't have electric charge that move around and can smash into things. So neutrons, for example, can bounce into neutrons and protons and cause all sorts of interactions. Although that tends to be on the nuclear level, right?
So very few people have access to do that, though.
Yeah. Okay. So. But the things that we deal with most of the time, is sort of day to day macroscopically, are things having to do with the electrons because they're not bound as tightly to the atom as the nucleus. The nucleus, there are much stronger forces, so you need lots of energy to access those things.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. But so. I've answered you, sort of? Or?
Enough.
Okay. So now let's pause and let's talk about energy, because that's where things become interesting. That's where you can do something useful with it. Okay? So first let me define energy for you. Energy is the ability to do work. Okay, so now I have to define work for you, and I have to caution you that by work we mean something very specific. So when I teach my students, when I get to work, I tell them, look, I consider, say, if I get paid for it, it's work. And my wife says that if you enjoy it a lot, it's not really work. Okay, so that's not a useful thing in terms of science. In terms of science, we mean something very specific when we talk about work. I won't give you the full, precise mathematical definition, but basically, when you do work on something, you push it and you speed it up or slow it down. Okay? That allows you to do most things you want to do, right? If you want to do something useful, you want to push something, pick something up or whatever, you're doing work on it. So, for example, if I take something, pick it up high, let go of it, right before I let go, it's not moving. Right? And it has no what we call kinetic energy. Kinetic energy is the energy something has by virtue of the fact that it's moving. If something's stationary, it has no kinetic energy. Right? When I let go of it, the force of gravity pulls in it, and it speeds it up as it goes down. So right before it hits the floor, it's moving very fast. Okay. So the force of gravity did work on this object that I let go of and caused it to speed up by the time it hit the ground. Okay? It turns out that just about anything we want to do that's useful needs energy to do it, right?
Yes. It works to bring it up to a level, and yes. Gravity did work.
Yeah. So absolutely, if you pick something up, then you're doing work on it, pushing it up, and if you let go of it, it pushes it down. There's a problem there because we start off by defining kinetic energy, which is the energy of motion. And the problem is that kinetic energy, we like to define things that are useful, and one thing that's useful are things that are conserved, things that are stayed the same, right? So it would be nice if there was something called energy that's conserved, but if you talk about kinetic energy, it's not conserved, right? So this thing is not moving, I let go of it, it suddenly is moving, right? So clearly kinetic energy is not conserved, so we invent something we call potential energy, which is the amount of work that gravity does moving it, right? So then when I pick this up, I do work pushing it up, gravity does negative work, potential energy changes, and so on. We won't bother you with technicalities. But at the end, what it means is when I push on something with a force, I speed it up, okay? Unless something happens, something else happens to it that doesn't allow it to speed up, right? So if I let go of this thing just like that, it'll fall, it'll speed up. If I have this in water, right, or if I have some other thick material, it may not speed up, it may hit some constant velocity, and that's because as it's going through the water, there's water molecules bumping into it that slow it down. But those water molecules, in turn, something's happening to them. Okay. So the point of this is now, let's go to how you do something useful with electricity. Okay. What you're going to want to do is somehow use the fact that electric charges push on each other and exert a force, very much like the fact that gravity pulls in something and speeds it up. You can use electrical forces to push on things. That gives it energy. When I let go of this, at the bottom of the floor, it's moving very fast, and I can do something with that very fast motion. I can use it to break something or do whatever. I can use it to lift something. Here, with electricity, I also want to somehow harness the force of those charges to do something with it. Okay. There are various ways you can do that. So first let's take a wire with current running through it. What that means is I've somehow set up this wire. So I have a piece of wire here, right? I somehow set up this wire so that charges want to move. Okay. I have to do that somehow. There are various ways of doing it. One is using chemical reactions. That again, some chemicals like electrons more than others. So I can set up a system where the chemical reaction pulls electrons in a certain direction, and those electrons get pushed around the wire. So a chemical system like that is called a battery. Okay, what that battery does is wind up exerting forces on the electrons, because the electrons are the things that move, and it pushes them through the wire. Now, usually when you push something, it speeds up, right? So there's Newton's laws business, which I won't get into, but if there's a net force in something, you speed it up. Right, so when you push a heavy refrigerator, you're pushing it really hard, you expect it to speed up according to this, and it doesn't speed up, and that's because there's friction pushing backwards on you, so the net force is zero. But if you were pushing something on the ice, if you constantly pushed it, it would keep on speeding up. Right? So we're pushing on these electrons with a chemical reaction, for example. So the question is, do these electrons speed up in the wire? And the answer is they try to, but as they're flowing, they bump into all sorts of other stuff. So if you have a metal wire, they bump into other electrons, they bump into the metal, and so on. So they can't easily, so they pick up some speed, but then they just, the faster they go, the more they bounce around and bump into things, so eventually they reach some constant speed. And that work that I did on them to speed them up goes into making the metal inside bounce around, which typically will heat up the metal. So one thing you can do is take current, pass it through a wire, heat up the wire. Okay? Once the wire is heated up, you can do things like warm up your water in it. So if you have a thing like my Rebbe used to have in whatever grade, you have this coil that you stick in water. I don't know if you've still seen those. You plug it in. What's happening is you're using, in this case, not chemical energy, but you're using perhaps a waterfall somewhere that's getting magnetic energy and converting it into electrical energy. And you're pushing the electrons that way. So what you're doing is you're heating up the coil, and you can heat things with it, or you can heat it up really hot. So for example, in an incandescent bulb, what you do is you take this current, pass it through a tungsten wire. That wire heats up. When the wire heats up, the electrons in it bounce around a lot. When they bounce around a lot, they emit light. The problem is you can't control the light to make it come out in a certain frequency, so most of the energy comes out in light you can't see, and that's why it gets so hot. A lot of it is infrared and so on. But some amount of that is coming from the emission of light, again, by these things bouncing around, that you can see. So that's the basic light bulb. There are fancier things like fluorescent bulbs and so on. What they use is the fact that you tear electrons off the atoms. When the atoms recombine, they again emit light. So let me take a step backwards. So I have to tell you a little bit more about the atom and electrons. Right? So you have a nucleus, you have electrons around. So I'm assuming this is useful eventually in the thinking of people. If I'm going completely off track, let me know. But,
well, it depends what you mean by useful. I mean, we haven't gotten, this is the first week, so we haven't explained what people have thought about it yet. I can pretty much, you know, as a spoiler here, say that the rabbis who made decisions on electricity probably did not think about what electricity is in as fine detail as you're presenting it. Okay. So, but it's still important for us to know, because electricity is electricity, regardless of who else knew about it.
Okay. So what I'm trying to do here, so I should give you the general picture if it's not clear. I've told you basically what electric charge is. Now I'm trying to tell you how you do something useful with electricity, because presumably that's the kind of thing you're going to encounter, right? I want to use it for something. Can I use it in whatever context? Okay. So if you have an atom, right, you have positive charge in the middle, a negative charge over here. So forget the atom for a second. Think that I'm sitting over here on Earth, and here is I'm holding something there. If I want to push it further away from Earth, I have to add energy to it, and I can toss it up in the air. Right? So if I have an electron going around an atom, if I want to pull it further from the atom, I have to give it energy. Right? So I have an atom, I add energy to it, the electron. This is a complete lie, because after quantum mechanics, this is not how we think about it. But if you very roughly think about this as a planetary system, something going around something else, and if you add energy to it, you can have this thing further away. But the electron will spontaneously come back down to a lower energy state. In that process, it's lost some energy. That energy is again emitted as light. In what happens in a fluorescent light is you do that, you pass current through gas, and you add energy to the atoms, the electrons jump up, the electrons come back down to lower energy, emit light. That light hits a coating on the bulb, which takes the light, which is typically ultraviolet, and converts it to visible light. Okay, so that's another kind of way you can get light from a bulb. So incandescent bulbs, you just heat up wire, it emits light by virtue of the fact that it's hot. This is a secondary thing where you excite the atoms then emit light in the ultraviolet. That light hits other material, which re-emits invisible light. Okay, so that's another type of bulb.
So just out of curiosity, I know sometimes with like a fluorescent light, when you first turn it on, it takes, like it continues to get lighter over time.
Right. So I don't know the details of that, and it has to do with when the amount of current flowing. Mm-hmm. So there's also the ballast used for something like that, and I don't remember the details of now. I'm sorry. But basically what's happening is, do you know?
Yeah.
If you know, please.
You have filaments at both ends, which heats up the gas, which makes it conduct easier, so the ballast can strike an arc, and then it starts going by on its own.
Okay, so you first have to set up the arc with the ballast, and then, okay.
Right, but I guess I was just curious as to why, like, if it's converting the ultraviolet, normally invisible light, into a visible light, I was curious as to why it gets brighter as it is left on.
So it sounds
opposed
like
to just
it's
reaching its brightness.
You mean when it flickers?
No, like, we have fluorescent lighting in our living room that when we turn it on, it's a little dimmer than when it will.
I have to take a guess that it takes time for all the gas to ionize and raise to a potential and then give off ultraviolet strike to phosphorus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a guess.
Fair enough.
Okay, so that's the general principle of getting light from electricity is like that, right? You're using the electric force in some way to add energy to either the electrons around atoms or to add general kinetic energy to all the electrons, and then they emit light. Let's talk about electrical motors, right? How do those things work? And there the idea is that when you have a wire carrying current in a magnetic field, you can set up a situation where it feels a force that makes it move. So what you're doing is you're taking advantage of the interaction of a magnet with moving charges, and current is a moving charge, so that will give you then mechanical something, right? Something moving that allows you, that's your basic motor, it allows you to do anything you want by passing current through something. Okay. So you have the basic notion of what electric charge is and what that does. You have the notion of what energy is, and you have the notion of how you take the forces on electric charges to do something useful, either to emit light or to do work with it. Yeah. What do you want to know next?
Can you talk a little bit about circuits?
Okay. So let's say you have a wire, and you have some chemical reaction that's pushing electrons. Okay, so let's say you have some chemical reaction that's pushing electrons, right? And I have a piece of wire. What's going to happen is... So what's going to happen is you're going to push the electrons to one side. As you pile up the electrons on one side, you're going to get a lot of negative charge in that side. You're going to get a lot of positive charge in the other side. And eventually, those electrons that are on one side push against any more electrons that want to come. Okay, so very quickly, if you take a battery and just hook up one side to a wire, right, what's going to happen, you're going to push electrons to the side, and then that's it. Nothing more can happen. Right. So the only way to get electrons to continue to flow is you have to take them off the back end where they were pushed and bring them back around, and then you can have things continue to move in a continuous loop or in a circuit. Okay, so a circuit is a continuous flow of electric charge. Because as soon as you stop that continuous flow, you just build up some charges, they oppose whatever you're trying to do, and it's over. Nothing can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take two plates and charge them up with electricity, and positive charge and one, negative charge in the other, but you're going to charge them up, and then it'll sit there. Remember, for anything useful, what we want to do is keep pushing on those charges and have them either bumping into the material or have them feel the force of a magnetic field, right? Which means that to do something useful, you want to keep those charges moving. Mm-hmm. So the only way that's going to happen is if you have a complete path for the charges to keep them going.
Can you explain a little how you get, or what is the process from going from power plant, whoever it is, be it nuclear, coal, whatever, to your electrical appliance, be it a motor and refrigerator or computer, television? How exactly does that, could you explain like the path of electricity, how that works?
Okay, so the basic idea is you need something that pushes on the electron.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about a power plant at a dam or whatever, right, you have a waterfall. The waterfall, so it's sort of the reverse of what I just said a motor was, right? In the case of a motor, what happens is you have electric current running and you have a magnetic field that causes it to turn.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have the reverse. You cause a magnet to spin and that generates electric force.
Mm-hmm.
And that generates this push on current. And basically what you're doing is just pushing charge. Okay? And the game is, how do I go from pushing charge here and transport it somewhere far away? It turns out that if I have a piece of wire, then if I send current through it, I lose some amount of energy So it would be great if I could take electrical energy here, which means push charge here, and have it just keep being pushed forever. But you get losses along the wire. Right? So if I push here, even though, since the wire is not... So I didn't use the term resistance before, but this notion that when I push the electrons, they collide with the material and then heats up the wire and so on, that's going to happen in anything that's not something called a superconductor. In most materials, I'm going to heat up a little bit and lose energy along the way. Okay? The energy I lose goes as a property of the material times the amount of charge moving. Okay? So what I'd like to do is somehow carry the same amount of energy, but I want to carry that amount of energy with as little current as possible. And that'll make it so that I lose as little energy as possible. So the big thing in transporting this force is finding a way of transporting that current, and that has to do with voltage differences. So how do I explain voltage differences?
You said I said ohm.
Yeah, okay.
I got to listen. I passed up on the obvious current Jewish questions, Joe.
That's
standards.
Okay.
So the ohm one, that I've got to use.
That's okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, the transformer, depending upon the ratio of the winds,
right.
The amount of current in one will affect the current.
Right, but I'm trying to define voltage and power, right? And I'm trying to understand how to say that. That's my problem.
Have you studied electrical appliances, though?
I work with electrical circuits a lot, but my circuitry tends to be, you know, fast pulse electronics. I work with, I work with things where I measure the length of a wire by sending a signal through it and seeing how long it takes to get from there to there. Right, so I work with, you know, things on the nanosecond scale and so on. So I don't work with refrigerators, right?
I was thinking about stoves, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, no, so that, yes, that I tend not to work with.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'll try.
Right.
Power is the product of the voltage times current.
Right.
And so if one goes down, the other goes up, right? If you maintain constant power. So what I want to do is to... reduce the amount of current that goes through the wire, which that causes the heating. So what I do is I trade the current for the voltage. I can transmit it down a transmission line, and then I can do the reverse process, and I remain almost the same amount of power transmitted.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. The problem is I'm not sure it says anything to the people here.
Would those help?
No. Let me give me a think about what the right way to say this is. So let's talk about. I guess there's a standard way of doing it, and I'm starting to understand why. Okay. So let's say I want to lift something up, so that eventually I'm going to do some work with it. And as I'm going to pick something up. Right, so that eventually when I let go of it, it's going to push down something and pick something else up. And I'm going to store energy by picking things up. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's my goal. So it takes the same amount of energy, right? I have to do the same amount of work to take something that weighs 1 pound and lift it up a foot, or take something that weighs 1/10 of a pound and lift it up 10 feet. Okay, it turns out it takes the same amount of work to do mm-hmm. those two things, right? So if I want to store a foot pound of energy, right, I can store a foot pound of energy by lifting a pound 1 foot and letting it fall, or lifting 1/10 of a pound 10 feet and letting that fall. Okay? There's something similar with respect to electricity when I'm moving these charges around. When you think about what this battery is doing by shifting things, what I can do is move a lot of charge across some electrical force, or I can move less charge across a bigger electrical force. So that's very similar. It's analogous. It's more than analogous. It's very close to the idea of lifting something higher and lifting less of it. Okay. Now, the way I lose energy in the wire is by the amount of charge I'm moving, okay, not by how high I'm lifting it, so to speak. So the game is to increase the height by which I'm lifting it, so to speak, but lift less charge. The height at which I'm lifting it in the electrical terms is voltage. That's the thing I'm comparing it with, right? So what you do is, at the place where you generate power, what you do is get very large voltage differences, and so you move these electrons right through very large voltage difference, but I don't have to move many electrons to do it. Then I transport this difference in voltage, right? So I've maintained some difference in height between two things. I maintain that height, ship it off someplace else, but what I need eventually is a lot of current to do whatever my machine wants to do and so on. So then what I do is I change from a little bit of current, a little bit of stuff very far apart, to much more stuff closer together. Okay, but it's always the case, so you're saying when it goes from a power station to somewhere else, my home use, it's always the case that I'm shipping the same amount of energy, except that I'm losing a little bit on the way, because there's no way to avoid losing a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm changing how it's stored in terms of large voltage differences, small amount of charge, small voltage differences, large amount of charge. Mm-hmm. And I change that, as you said, with transformers or whatever, I get from one form to the other.
Weird question about pulling out this power. Given that, you know, we have sort of this fixed thing, I mean, you've got the 110 and 220 or the usual voltage things you have in the world. Right. And this is a question that we're actually going to see in the sources later on. Specific case, let's say I have a stereo.
Right.
Am I using more electricity if I make it louder?
Okay. If the stereo is designed right, you are.
Okay. What does designed right mean?
Okay.
I don't want to get to solid state in tube.
No. I don't. No, but it's right. Understood. Okay. The point is that electricity has to be generated and it costs money, right, mm-hmm. to use, right? And now we know, you know, there are issues. Energy costs you more things. It costs you the environment or whatever. So ideally, you want to use as little energy as you need to use. It's possible to build a stereo which is something that takes electrical energy and converts it to sound waves, right? It's possible to build such a device so that... Right? It's possible to build such a device so that it always uses the same amount of power regardless of what it's putting out. Okay, mm-hmm. But then that's a waste. If you're playing your stereo quietly, then you're wasting all this energy you don't need to use. You can design the electronic circuitry so that that's the case, but then you're usually wasting all this power. Because at the end, if you have a stereo, your goal is to transmit sound. Mm-hmm. The energy you have to use... So sound is a wave, right? What sound is vibrations in the air. In your ear, it means that your right eardrum is vibrating. You need enough energy. If you want to hear something, you somehow have to manufacture something that has enough energy in it to vibrate your eardrums a certain amount, right? If I can do that, I've done my job. Mm-hmm. Any energy I use beyond that is wasted.
Given that you've got the same amount of current coming through the wire, though.
Okay, I'll get there.
All right.
Right? Okay. I have to use that amount of energy that it gets to excite your eardrums, right? That's the minimum amount I need to use. My goal would be to design something so that I use only that amount of energy. If I could do something perfectly, mm-hmm. I'd never have to do anything beyond that. If something's louder, that means your eardrum is vibrating with bigger things, right? Bigger amplitude of vibration. That carries more energy. So the louder something is, the more energy I have to put into it. Okay? That means that the bare minimum of energy I have to take from electricity to sound gets bigger as the sound waves increase. So the louder I want to make it, the more energy in the sound waves, the more power I have to put. Power is energy per unit time. Okay, so the more energy I have to use per unit time in order for that to happen. If I have a good circuit design, that'll mean that it's never the case, it's impossible, that people showed in the 1800s when they started to learn about engines, it's impossible to build any device which is 100% efficient. Okay, so you always lose energy. But it would be stupid for design reasons to design something that uses extra energy for no good reason. So a good electronic design will indeed use more power as you increase the volume. Because why should I, you know, if I'm blaring these speakers really loud so that the apartment shakes, right, when something goes, why should I use that much energy if I just want to quietly listen to something? So it's possible to do a design. You can design an amplifier such that you're always using the same amount of power, but there'd be no reason to do that. Now, as far as the current, you actually will draw a different amount of current. So typically stereos will be rated in maximum wattage or something, but that doesn't mean they use it all the time. That's the maximum it can use. If you're playing it more quietly, it'll draw less current.
What way would you design it so that it would be, so that when you put the volume up, it was using more energy in?
That's usually how it's designed. That is usually the case.
That you have to draw
more current, and therefore, since when you plug into the wall, it's always 120 volts here, then the amount of power you use is proportional to the current draw. Because the voltage is how you're lifting it, the current is the amount of charge that's falling. The voltage is always the same, so it's just how much current you draw. The louder you make it, the more current you draw, and the more power you're using.
So would that be the same with the radio?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Other questions?
Wait, did you study microwaves?
What?
Did you study microwaves?
I know a little bit about microwaves. That's not my specialty.
What about conduction and convection microwaves?
That's somewhat off the topic of the electric circuitry, though. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how do watts and the units...
A watt? So energy... Okay, so first we have to measure energy, right? One way of talking about energy isn't kinetic energy, that's energy of motion. It turns out that's the mass of an object times its velocity squared. Okay, the mass of an object is kilograms, velocity is meters per second, if I use those units, so kilogram meters per second squared is energy. I can talk, and the name for 1 kilogram meters squared per second squared is a joule. That's energy usage. I can talk about how much energy I use per unit time. 1 joule per second is 1 watt. So a 100-watt bulb means that you're using 100 watts a second. Okay. So what's a watt? If you have something that has a mass of half a kilogram, okay, and it's moving... Sorry, it has a mass of 2 kilograms, and it's moving at 1 meter per second... Right, so right, this is a meter. If something's moving along like this, it moves that, it covers that meter in 1 second. If it has a mass of 2 kilograms, which means it weighs about 4 pounds, then that has an energy of a joule. Okay, so that thing has energy of a joule. And it says if you're using something that's 100 watts, that means that every second you're using enough energy to speed up 100 things like that. Okay, to that speed.
So I have a question from before. We were talking about the 110 volts and plugging into the wall and everything like that. How would that differ, you know, in the volume? How would that differ, if at all, when we're dealing with something with, let's say, a battery, rather than a voltage, you know, in the wall? Is the battery...
So there's two issues. One is what the voltage is. Battery voltages are typically much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Two is there's something called the alternating current versus direct current.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Direct current means that you're always pushing the electrons in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And alternating current means you're going back and forth. You push them this way, then push them that way, then push them this way, and push them that way. As far as power is concerned, it's not a difference, right? At the end, I want to push electrons. I want to get current to get energy out of it. Mm-hmm. So I need to have these pushed. And it doesn't make a difference sort of if I do it this way or I do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for practical reasons, there's a lot of advantage to doing alternating current. So for example, if what you're doing is generating electricity via waterfall, right, then you have something spinning, and naturally the way it's hooked up, you switch back and forth mm-hmm. between different values. The major reason for alternating current is the thing we talked about before, and you were talking about transformers, that because it gets very hard to ship, because it's better to ship energy at a high voltage and then use it at lower voltage, alternating current can be easily changed from high voltage to low voltage mm-hmm. using something called a transformer, which is basically just 2 coils of wire
mm-hmm.
okay, wrapped around each other. So alternating current is what you get in the wall, because that's the thing we can easily ship from Niagara or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, batteries just use the chemical reaction. There's no simple way of making that alternating current. You just load, you just have a solution of some sort of chemical here, a solution of another sort of chemical there. And it's always the case that this side likes electrons and this side gets its electrons gobbled up. So it's always going to be in the same direction.
So would changing the volume on a battery-operated thing affect that at all, or is that going to go at the same speed regardless?
It's still the case that you somehow have to take this force, this electrical force, and convert it to something useful. So you need some electronic system that does that. And it'll still be the case, the more energy you want to get out of it, with a good design, the more energy you get out of it, the more current you can draw. The difference is that a battery is limited, because it's a chemical reaction, it's limited typically in how much current you can supply. So a car battery, where you need a lot of current, you want to push the motor and get it turning, right? You need a lot of current, so you need these really big batteries. Note that this really big battery could still be 12 volts, right? And I can get a 12-volt battery by taking, you know, eight of these little, you know, these little guys and hooking them together. I could get 12 volts from that also. The difference is that this big battery can move a lot more charge. Okay, when I have a lot more charge at the same voltage, I have more energy, right? So I need a lot of power, right? Energy per unit time. So I do that. But so it's easier to get lots of power from the wall, right? Because there's, you have, you know, some big dam, big waterfall generating a lot of energy. You can't easily store that much energy. Again, you know, for a car battery, you need this much to store it. So typically battery-powered things, the batteries will get used up very quickly. The chemical reactions basically use up all the stuff you have in there, and you can't do any more with it.
Can you explain a little about the rechargeable batteries?
Right. So there, I don't know all the details. It's basically a question of, is it a reversible chemical reaction? Right. You have sometimes what you form. So what's going on is that you're shipping electrons from one place to the other, and you have chemical reactions going on. And it's either possible or not possible to drive this thing in reverse. That is, I gained energy. I used up chemical energy by the reactions happening in the direction they want to go, that ship electrons from one place to the other. I can undo that by putting in electricity the other way and undo the chemical reaction. By adding energy to them, I can drive it the other way, the way it didn't want to go. It's not always the case for all chemical reactions that you can easily do that. And even when you can do that, you can't, you know, it's limited how often you can do it. So I guess there are things you can recharge more or less, but I don't know the details of the chemistry. Do you know
why or how the rabbis possibly the way they did make the lectures in the Usher? And what might they say today?
Yeah, well, that's what the subsequent classes are going to be about. Today was just about
jumping the gun.
So I'll make very clear, if it was not made clear, I am not here to talk about halacha. Okay?
Other electron processes like light emitting diodes.
Hey, that's why we have other classes in the series. That's why it's a series. You can't do it all in a day.
You want theory to talk about.
You just want to. Okay. So no, he was saying something else. There are LED light bulbs and so on.
Devices which use electricity different than
right. But LEDs, it's basically the same sort of thing, right? In LEDs, so I told you about atoms where you have a nucleus in different place the electrons go. It's possible to manufacture materials where you have all sorts of different energy levels, possible energy values the electrons can have, and therefore when the electrons go from a high energy state to a lower energy state, they emit light of the appropriate amount of energy, which means it's either visible light or not visible, or the color changes and so on. So LEDs basically uses solid-state devices to give you particular differences in energy of the levels of the electron, therefore emits different...
Yeah, we'll talk about... I promise you, George. George, we're going to talk about that. I promise you. We're going to talk about that. It's on the list.
Any questions?
All right.
So... you said the difference between AC and DC is that one is only able
it's
to
always pushing the electrons in the same direction. That's direct current, it's called. Right. The alternating current means it's going back and forth.
Right, so when you recharge a battery, is that the case when...
No. So a battery is DC, and when you recharge it, you're driving it in the opposite direction. You're taking something external in pushing the electrons opposite the way they went naturally chemically to undo the chemical reaction.
You're not making it alternate.
No, you're not making... No. So alternating current, so the US will be 60 times a second. It flips its directions back and forth. Here, what you're doing is you're taking a bunch of chemicals, you're shoving energy to it and undoing the reaction.
Which is the most efficient, HC or DC?
In principle, I guess, if by efficient you mean... So the question is, what do you mean by efficiency? If efficiency means...
Cost-wise, how much money I'll save?
That's a different sort of question, okay. Efficiency. So there are different ways you can define efficiency, right? So one way to define efficiency is for a given amount of power of energy that's stored that I use, how much do I get useful things out of it? There's no difference between AC and DC. If your question is as far as storage and so on, right, so typically it's difficult to store energy. That's a general problem. So, you know, this stuff in the wall, you're manufacturing somewhere, so I just use it as it's manufactured. I don't have to worry about storing it. With batteries and things, I have to store it somehow, and that's, you know, people are having a hard time, for example, with solar cells, right? There's a lot of energy from the sun, and the biggest problem there is, how do I store this energy so it's useful when I want to do it? Mm-hmm. So I'd say if you're talking about cost and so on, there the problem is, how do I store the energy?
For something like a touch screen, assuming, obviously, if the touch screen is off, it's using a lot less of the battery's energy than if it's on. From what you know, is it using more energy if you touch the touch screen versus not?
We can charge that capacitor, so you have to use energy to move the charges on to.
So I guess the same sort of thing, though, right? Eventually, when you're touching the touch screen, you're doing something with that. So something is amplifying that signal and using it. So a reasonable amplifier would be set up so that it's not doing anything when you're not touching it. It's doing something only when you're touching it. So my guess would be that you are using more energy when you touch it.
Okay. Thank you.
Because you're doing something with it. I understand your point is you just have a capacitor that you're changing in principle.
You're moving charge from your body onto the lower layer, and that's causing it to detect where you're touching.
So there's another one you may not have thought about. So you all know about these electronically controlled faucets, right? You stick your hand underneath it and whatnot, and it senses it. So there's a company now that just senses the fact that your body's near it, from the fact that you induce charge in the metal. And it turns out you can just move your hand over it. There's no electrical sensor. It uses the fact that the faucet itself is a conductor. So if you come near it, it senses that, and it'll turn on or off. So you don't have to wave anymore under it and hope you hit it. If you're anywhere within close enough to the faucet, the water will start running.
So that's electric.
That's still an electrical thing, yes.
So if I just, like, if it was, like, in a public restroom, and I just, like, ran by all of them, they would, like, go on and off as I went past them.
If you put your hand... It has to be, you know, they're set up, I think, you know, you have to be some distance away.
Oh, yeah,
to
be some distance, I see.
But
okay.
If you went like this... Right.
They would all
so what about
in many places they have a detector so that when you walk by the porch light goes on.
Right.
There are several different ways to do it.
Yeah.
How does that affect
George, classes.
Right. So
anything about halakha, we're going to discuss
so the question. But the question is, what is that? What is going on there?
So you can talk about the science part.
Okay.
Don't ask about how it affects halakha. We'll talk about that part later.
So in all sensors, what you're doing is, so with those, there are different sorts of sensors, right? There are things that where you break a beam, right? Where you have something... that something is emitting light, something else is sensing the light. When you go over here, you stop it, right? In the smoke detector, what happens is you have actually radioactive particles going through here and smoke blocks them, you get fewer things coming in. So what happens over there, that's an interesting state, because there you're detecting light the whole time, and then by breaking the beam, you're actually detecting less light. So in principle, I would guess that you have less current draw when you break it. But the ramification of that is you turn the light on, which means there's more current draw.
When you pass by, you're out of the beam. Back to drawing more.
Yeah.
One more question. You know, in restaurants, we have those heating lamps. Did you ever test those, the lamps themselves, the bulbs, and find out which is efficient in keeping the food hot?
It's not that type.
Yes, I don't.
No,
I haven't.
Okay.
So anything else as far as sensors? Or,
So how do you save energy? Like with the solar panels, if they sort of charge up and they start working, how do you save it for a later time? How does that energy get conserved?
So the ways I know of saving things are either by doing something like heating something, like heating water. Okay, so you have energy. Hot water means the molecules have more kinetic energy. So you can store energy as heat. So that's one possibility. Another possibility.
So as the solar panel becomes heated, it directly goes to the hot water?
Well, what they'll have is, they'll flow water through it, and you heat up the water. So that's one possibility. So you heat, there are systems like that where you try to heat something up, or there's chemical storage. Right? I don't know of systems that charge something where you do capacitor storage, because that's, do you know of any systems like that? Right. There are things like that. It's interesting. In cars, right, these hybrid cars, what happens is when you hit the brake, what it can actually do is transfer the spinning so that you wind up charging something.
They started putting in flywheels in the New York City subway for that reason, too. So when the subway brakes, convert that energy back
that
into the system.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
But basically, you have to store it somehow, and that's, again, people are...
There are...
their problems.
Right. They call e-ink. I can early Kindle readers.
Right.
There is no charge current flow. You have these tiny little balls that were half black, half white, and only whether the charge was going one way or the other way, but I don't know if there was any current flow.
Right.
To turn some a pixel on or off, a dot on or off, all you have to do is change the direction of the field.
Right, and then it stays. So the question is, what happened there, right? Because it stays.
There's no current that flows.
But there's still some amount of energy, right? If the thing dies, the screen goes black. You can't keep it going without anything. So there's some small amount of charge. Some amount of something. I mean, there are magnetic memories and things like that. Right, so if you talk about computers, there's memory for which you need current flowing, but there's memory where you don't, where you store it, and just whether something's right angle momentum is that way or that way. So those are ones where you don't use you won't use current, but you use it when you access it.
Your flash drive.
Anytime you use something, you're transforming one energy into another form of energy.
Yeah.
It's conservation.
You had a question?
So you're saying on the flash drive it's being...
Well, like when you have a flash drive, you save stuff there, you pull it out of your computer, no energy is going there. But when you put it back in, the computer knows what you put on there before.
Right.
That's why the solid state thing, like once it's set, it's set. Notice that?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much. I won't take too much of your time. This was absolutely...
Thank you very much.
This pun is not really intentional, but for me it was enlightening.
Okay.
I'm lacking a better adjective for that. And again, thank you so much for your time. This has really been fantastic.
No problem. I hope it's clear. Some of these questions need engineers to answer.
Of course.
Right.
So understood, but it certainly lays the groundwork for being able to even have the conversation. When we start evaluating the different opinions of who says what is electricity and how do you translate a modern technology and apply that to ancient laws. And to what extent does it fit? To what extent does it not fit? Politics aside about people trying to make it fit in one thing or another. Again, we've got several weeks to discuss that. But you can't even have that conversation evaluate unless you've got some idea what you're talking about. So hopefully, I don't think anyone here is getting a degree in to be an electrician immediately from this. And just as I don't think anyone's getting smicha from listening to the classes. But the whole point is to know more out than when you came in. And for that, thank you so much, Dr. Mintzer. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you for letting me talk. If you don't know by now, I think one of the main reasons people become professors is they like hearing themselves talk. So
thank you for the opportunity.
And now you're free to listen to it again and again. Be well.